Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am the smart. I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for staying with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you, as always, as I continue to broadcast live from Midtown Atlanta. That's right, on the road today and tomorrow. And we're about to have a great visit with our good friend, longtime Brain Trust member, Tony Paradiso. Tony is one of our top business management experts. He's the author of The Management Mind Field. And Tony is also a regular small business owner, just like you and me. In fact, he's got a retail operation. And it's always good to check in with Tony from time to time and see how things are going out there on Main Street with folks who are actually, you know, standing at the cash register sometimes. I know he goes over there and does that a few times. And so let's see what Tony has to say. Tony Paradiso, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. Yeah, I'm my own little microcosm.
you're our utility infielder on so many things, Tony. What about talk to us a little bit about the economy that you're seeing out there. One of the things that we're all kind of really keeping our eyes peeled for right now and our ear to the ground on is you know, is the economy coming back? Or, you know, when can we actually say that the recovery is more involved in what we're seeing than the vestiges of the recession? And, you know, could we possibly be seeing an expansion happening out there in front of us? What are you seeing out there?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. There is an expansion occurring, but it just depends on where you're standing. My business, this little kind of deli country store, has been doing very well in the first quarter, and it is to a certain extent a microcosm of a section of the market, because I cater to a lot of working class construction guys, landscapers. So I kind of see the level of activity there. So it's interesting to, you know, the people on the retail front, they really do understand what's happening on the leading edge of the economy.
Well, we've got a lot of folks in the country unemployed in that strata of the marketplace.
This is the interesting thing. You look at the unemployment numbers and you say they're not improving and they're not about to improve anytime soon, you know, notwithstanding the government hiring hundreds of thousands of, you know, census workers.
Right.
Yet, I'm driving down to Boston on Saturday, and I pass one of the local malls, and the parking lot is jammed.
Yeah.
I mean jammed. Right? And I have a peer group, colleagues in a diverse array of businesses, all of which have seen spikes in business in the first quarter. And so you see those things, and they're undeniable. I mean, there is business activity. The numbers are, my column this week was really an overview of some of the key economic indicators. And there's no question that the economy is turning, and the recovery, at least as measured by this fiscal year, may actually be stronger than many had thought. Now, so that you have against the paradox of a very high unemployment rate that will probably persist for some time.
Well, we have to point out, we have to recognize that the unemployment rate is not a true picture of the employment status in America. It is one factor that, frankly, leaves out a lot of people. And so it's, the truth is that when we look at 9.8 or 10 or whatever unemployment rate, the truth is the actual number is worse than that.
Oh, it's much worse than that.
Much worse than that. Maybe as much as not double, but maybe by 70%. But the thing is that when people start being hired, the unemployment rate doesn't matter. I mean, a job is a job. Let's get some people to work. And when merchants start to see that their ordering of new products is not just replenishing of, you know, basic stocks, but things are actually turning again, and then they start realizing that if they don't hire somebody, they're wearing out their current employees. You know, that's when things will start happening. So the consumer does seem to be coming back to the marketplace, doesn't it?
Yes, they do. And I think you hit the nail on the head. The challenge now is hiring is not going to occur until you're under duress to hire. You're going to squeeze right. everything you can. And in fact, in my small business, I told my people, look, if you get a lot of customers at one time, you know, we used to be very focused on service. And I said to them, look, we're selling them a $5 sub, you know, and they can't have great service and great value at the same time. You go into Walmart, there's 24 cash registers, three of them are lit, right? That's a right. function of the economy. And the easiest way to scale back on cost is to scale back your payroll. And so between that and the uncertainty with this health care bill, a lot right. of employers are going to put off hiring to the very last minute.
Well said. Tony Paradiso and I will be right back. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Don't go away. Just like all. Welcome back, 17 Till. Little Joe Cocker bringing this back. We're rocking and rolling with our good friend Tony Paradiso. I'm Jim Blassingame. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance. Lots of stuff there that will help you with your small business. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And the blog is there too, by the way. Check out some of the new posts that we have there. And if you're on Twitter and you want to follow me there, I'm at Jim Blassingame. Tony Paradiso, the author of The Management Minefield, is also a columnist, also a business owner, just like you and me, including a retail operation and a construction company. Right, Tony?
Yeah. I'm a glutton for punishment.
you just can't get enough of it, I know.
Yeah, really. Beat me.
I want to come back to what you've learned in this retail operation, this convenience store. You've learned an awful lot about the fundamentals of maximizing profits, putting your investment where it belongs, letting customers understand that, you know, they can't have, you know, they can't have a great deal and you know, service coming out of their ears. There's got to be, you know, there's no free lunches. You got to, you know, it's got to be a good deal for both parties, the company, the company serving and the customer being served, right?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, you can't do everything and make money. Well, maybe some companies can, but that's the exception to the rule. You know, so things have to give. And last year I went to this, you know, I just basically plagiarized Subway. I went to this $5 sub, and it had a miraculous effect on my food business, which is where I make most of my money. And so, you know, so you are cutting your margins, even though I was able to cut my raw material expenses, you're still, you know, squeezing your margins, and something's got to give. And so I decided I wasn't going to staff as generously as I had in the past, which meant that it was going to take a couple of minutes longer for people to get service. But, you know, people understand that. I think part of this whole downturn is people have been conditioned to expect to wait longer online simply because there aren't as many people to service them. And so that actually works.
It's a very interesting thing, this dynamic between companies and customers.
Right.
Let me tell you an old story. Tony, as my audience knows, back in the very late 60s and early 70s, I worked for Sears. And that was the end of the heyday of Sears before the recession of 74, 75.
Mm-hmm.
And people loved Sears. They loved doing business with Sears because when you went to Sears, you could get served like crazy. There were part-timers there who'd been part-timers for 25, 30 years who were highly professional, and people, you know, they were like members of the family. So when Sears realized that they couldn't continue to provide that service and stay in business, they cut back on some things. Now, they didn't cut back any more than Kmart did. They didn't cut back any more than Penny's did. They'd always done more, but now they were sort of at the level that Kmart and Penny's was in terms of service. Customers revolted. The very idea that you serve us like everybody else, and they held that against Sears in those days. And so my point is, your customers, you know, they have expectations, and you can actually train customers on what to expect, can't you?
Yeah, I think you can, and that's interesting. You know, all else being equal in that scenario, if what Sears did was just lower their service without providing any other value in any other area to their customers, then the proposition, there was inequity in that proposition. Mm-hmm. And the customers will either intuitively or not, you know, recognize that. And so what's important is there's got to be a balance. So if you're gonna cut back a little bit on service, then you've got to provide some incremental value to compensate in some way.
Right. But people get used to what they're used to, and even though they didn't get any better job, any better service at Penny's or Kmart, they moved to those companies because they were mad at Sears about the way they treated them.
That's interesting. Well, I think today small businesses can actually take advantage of some of the things that are happening at the big box stores, because no matter what store you go into today on the retail level, service probably takes a little bit longer simply because people have cut back on staffing.
Yeah.
It's just
that's just
the way it is. And so you know, once you look at that big expense, which, you know, payroll is always your biggest expense, once you scrub your materials costs as much as you can, because after a while it becomes law of diminishing returns. Now I'm focused on looking at my profit per hour. I mean, I'm literally calculating my profit per hour.
You're incrementalizing this profit picture, right? This is not how much did I make at the end of the month. You're checking every hour.
Every hour to see whether I'm maximizing my day, because I open the store at 6:30, I close it at 7. Does that make sense? Can I open the store at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock?
Right.
And actually make more money,
even though some customers would go away.
That's right.
Does that might not change? That might improve your profit picture, even though you might not be getting as much business.
Absolutely, my revenue may go down, but my profit may go up. And you know what?
Right.
The bottom line that matters, not the top line. People get fixated on that top line. Oh, I want to be $1 million company or $5 million company. No, I want to be a $500,000 company that makes $100,000 in profit. That's what I want to be.
But at the same time, there are scenarios where some behavior, some of your operation can't be just about profit. It has to be about traffic. It has to be about cash flow. There are those considerations too, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. There's always strategic implications. For example, if I decide to open later and I give up my breakfast business, which isn't making any money, right? Well,
right.
I lose a breakfast customer. I don't care about them because I don't make any money. But if that breakfast customer is also a lunch customer,
right,
and then they don't come back for lunch because they can't stop in early in the morning, then I got
maybe
a problem.
And what about this? The person who feeds them breakfast has a smile on their face and knows their name. Where are they going to come back? Where are they going to go to at lunch? I think I know. Stand by. Hold that thought, Tony. We're going to be right back, folks. 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Tony Paradiso is our guest. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for staying with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. Tony Paradiso is our guest. Our good friend, the author of The Management Minefield. Tony, how do we find you online?
Actually, the best way to find me these days is because I write a weekly column that could be very interesting to all your listeners, is at the Nashua Telegraph, www.nashuatelegraph.com. I write a column every Sunday. It runs the gamut to macroeconomics to looking at the small business environment.
And your book is still out there, right?
My book's still out there, but, you know, that's so many lives ago now that I'm really more focused on the column because it's current.
But I still want to point it out to you folks, The Management Minefield. So so if you find it in the library or on eBay or wherever you may find
it. Right, it'll be a collector's item.
I encourage you to check it out. Okay, we're talking – you were saying as we went to the break about how you're literally managing your profit picture by the hour. And we were talking about, you know, how to determine, how to use that kind of metric to determine when you should open, what products to offer, what person to have working, you know, should you have a manager working at this time or maybe not that time, et cetera, right?
Right.
I mean, these are ways for you to micromanage your profit picture, which is what people need to be doing right now, isn't it?
Right. And so,
here, what we have to remember is, folks, now if you heard me say this before, probably heard Tony say it too, in your business, it's not what you make, it's what you keep.
Right. So take, for example, the store, which I make, you know, it's a convenience store, but I call it a country store because it's got a little bit more cachet. But I don't care about the convenience side. I make all my money on food and ice cream, so that's my focus. So I do a breakfast business, a lunch business, and now I've developed a little bit of a dinner-to-go business. So the question becomes, my breakfast business is anemic, and I don't make a lot of money in the morning.
Pardon me, Tony. Do you still sell gas?
No.
Okay.
We're strictly food and convenience.
I got you. Okay, go ahead.
So the breakfast business hasn't really made any money, and it's several hours during the morning that I'm open that may not be effective. So the question becomes, can I jettison the breakfast business in lieu of attempting to replace it with an evening business which fits more my profitable hours to begin with? And so, you know, we were talking before the break. Well, great, I'm not making any money in the morning, but if I lose that breakfast guy, or if I lose that guy that comes in for a lottery ticket or a pack of smokes, I may lose him for lunch too. So I can't just look at the absolute profit. I'm also looking at my product mix. What am I selling in those hours? And then what's the probability that if I decide to open later to save the money and focus on my kind of core hours,
right?
You know, would I lose that customer?
Could you do this, Tony? And folks, I know Tony's talking about food and convenience, but take Tony's perspectives, his metrics, his thinking, and apply it to any business that you've got out there. It doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah,
try to think about what he's doing, not what he's applying it to. Tony, could you try to identify the people who come in for breakfast and sort of count noses almost and say, okay, of the 25 people who came in for breakfast, only 5 of them came back for lunch while we're offering breakfast. So if we didn't offer breakfast, we wouldn't lose that much. Or of the, you know, the 25 that came in for breakfast, 20 of them came back for lunch. Wouldn't that, you could almost count noses, couldn't you?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you're looking at customer counts, you're looking at product distribution, and you're looking at profitability, and then right, you're looking for the intersection between that segment of your business and your core business. And so if you make a decision to say, look, that's an unprofitable segment of my operation, I'm going to close it down, you have to weigh that against potential losses in your profitable section, and then what else can you do to compensate for that. So my focus is, all right, breakfast, because I've got a Dunkin' Donuts drive-through up the street, all right?
Yeah.
You're not going to beat that. No matter what I do, I'm not going to beat that. So why should I even try? So can I transition away from breakfast and focus on dinner, because the drive time is always a good time.
Right.
And can I leverage that time to build a food business at the back end instead of the front end of the business? So it's really
here's the meat of this, folks. The only way, Tony, you can do that is if you're analyzing it on a micro basis.
Right.
And if you can't do it looking at it from the parking lot, you got to get inside and use the kind of metrics that Tony's been talking about. Tony, I got to wrap it up. Thanks for being here. Good job today.
My pleasure.
Take care of yourself. Good luck with the subs today.
It'll be a good day for subs. It's sunny.
There you go. It's going to be a nice day. That's good. Thanks, Tony. Tony Paradiso, ladies and gentlemen. What great instruction he gave us. Hope you got some good ideas. I know I did. I got to wrap it up for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. I'll be back in the next hour.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.